This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Mark Gastineau. You're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Mark, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's January 3rd, 2023. Michael K., Don LaGreca at Madison Square Garden, and Peter Rosenberg. We are here until 6:30. Ranger pregame show at that point. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. First off, we say Happy New Year to each other and to all of our listeners. Hope you had a great holiday and looking forward to the new year. But we start with a somber story today. And that is what happened to DeMar Hamlin yesterday on Monday Night Football with about 5 minutes left in the first quarter. It was tough to watch, and it does serve as a reminder that football is a violent, violent game. And, you know, one misplaced shoulder into the chest of a healthy 24-year-old during the way the heart resets, from what I've read, you know, that could send everything out of rhythm, and, you know, all of a sudden DeMar Hamlin has cardiac arrest on the field, and it was tough to watch, guys.
Yeah, it was. I actually wasn't. I was watching the game. I left the game, planned on coming back. Obviously, it's game of the year potentially, right? I mean, this is a game I think everybody, even if your team is out and pathetic like mine, you still want to watch. And I was ready to come back, and someone texted, "This doesn't look good." And I said, "I what's going on here?" And I flip over. And they're in studio.
Yeah.
Susie Colbert, Booger McFarland, Adam Schefter in studio. I'm going, and Don, I'm going, what the hell is going on here? And very quickly it became clear that this was unlike any of the things we've seen in recent times.
Yeah, I mean, guys that have been in the NFL forever said they've never seen it. Now, you've seen ambulances on the field, Don, during training camp, heat exhaustion, things like that. But during games like this, and you could hear it in Joe Buck's voice, you know, they were furiously pounding on his chest. This is something that players don't see. Head injuries, that's not the way, obviously, it's treated on the field. But they were obviously administering very aggressive CPR. And, Don, it was tough to watch. It really was.
And I had just out of coincidence a couple of weeks ago, was going over the last and only death on the field in an NFL game was Chuck Hughes, a wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. And it was eerily similar, where, you know, CPR was administered, the game ended up being postponed. He actually died on the field. They revealed that he died in the hospital later on, but he actually passed away on the field. But that's 51 years ago, guys. So there's actually no footage of it. There was no hit. He just collapsed. Similar situation, but you know, you don't have the microscope on the sport in 1971 that you have today. So we all saw millions of people, and as Peter said, could have been the game of the year, and the audience was immense. You know, seeing just somebody fall that way, and then, you know, CPR being administered, and the players all at one knee, you know, actually crowding around him so fans and cameras couldn't see the work that was being done in real time. No, nobody in our lifetime had ever seen anything like that before, and it was just really, really scary.
And I know that, you know, obviously what we were not going to do, and this was the tough spot of the broadcasters last night, is speculate from a health standpoint. None of us are doctors. None of us know anything.
Right.
It's pointless. I think what we can speculate on, though, in good conscience, is what was happening behind the scenes last night and whether or not the NFL wanted to suspend that game and thought it was just the right thing to do, or whether the players and the head coaches, who clearly seem to really be on top of things and want to be in touch with their players, made a decision, we're not playing, and forced the NFL's hand.
Yeah, it's almost the chicken and the egg, you know, which came first. I think the NFL knew the players were not going to play. They just couldn't. They weren't in the mindset to play, and I think they made the right decision. What I think was unbelievably unfair, you know, on social media, people are jumping, you got to call this game. You got to call this game. He left the field by ambulance at 9:25. They called the game at 10:01. This is a $12 billion industry. You don't just snap your fingers and just call the game like that. Now, that was obviously the end game, the way it was going to be, but that's not the way big business works. Everybody, you know, in front of their computer or on their phone, they could be the big tough guy and say, you've got to call the game, which was obviously the thing to do, but you've got steps that you have to take. You don't think that Roger Goodell had to get on the phone to Robert Iger, the head of Disney, who has Monday Night Football on ESPN? You don't think that they have to talk to the Players Association? These things are not done in a vacuum. The criticism was ridiculous. It took about 35 minutes for them to call the game.
You know, the problem you had in real time, Michael, is at first we were hearing there's going to be a 5-minute
respite. Which they said was not true.
Conjecture on my part is that I believe that's probably what the NFL's instinct was to do, and the players were probably like, no, you're not. Because it was Troy Vincent after the fact who said, no, there was never going to be any conversation about waiting 5 minutes. We were not going to play that game. You know, I think the players were probably the ones that forced the issue. The instinct is always going to be, can we move forward with the game? But as you saw that go on, Michael, I just think the idea or the concept of trying to move forward that just seemed to be ridiculous as time continued to move on. So I understand you've got to make a phone call, but if you look at the bylaws of the NFL, the commissioner has the call. You know, would it be so wrong if he had just said, we're not going to play this game, guys. We've got people kneeling, praying. We've got a player that was trying to get resuscitated on the field. We're not going to play, and we will deal with the consequences after the fact. So I disagree. I think there could have been more of a sense of urgency of let's just clear the field. The plan is not to play. If we get some amazing news that he has recovered fully, then maybe we'll try to come back and play.
But who's
but I don't think there's anything
saying,
wrong with but, the instinct of not playing,
but,
period.
But again, when you're running a $12 billion industry, you just don't go with your instinct. You have to get facts. Well, and you can't say, well, for now we're not going to play, but if we get great news that DeMar is okay, then we're going to go back on the field. No, you take your time, you make the right decision, which is what they ultimately came to. I think the NFL handled it as well as you could, and the Players Association handled it well. I just don't think the players were playing. Even if they said the game is going to go on, the players would forfeit the game. Now, the NFL today has said that this game is not going to be made up this week. It doesn't say that the game is going to be canceled. They say it will not be made up this week. Hey, most of Buffalo Bills are back in Buffalo already. There's really no logistical way for them to make up the game. But this game really has a lot on the line. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds ghoulish to talk about, but again, you're playing an NFL season now. Let's say Buffalo is not in the right frame of mind to play this weekend, and they play the Patriots. Well, is that fair to the Dolphins and the Steelers? If the Patriots just win the game and Buffalo forfeits, all of a sudden you've got a team that's in there and two teams that are out that never had a chance to be in. And as for the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals, their seeding, whether or not they get a bye in the first round, well, all of that hinges on this as well. That's why they're saying this game is not canceled. Right now it's 7-3 Bengals with about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. And what could happen is this. If this game does end up meaning something really, really important, they could play it the week after week 18 and then compress the playoffs because there's 2 weeks between the AFC and NFC championships and the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden, you just take that second week away and then compress it and move everything down that week and play that game on week 19. I don't think you could just cavalierly say and have teams not make the playoffs. Again, the most important thing is a human life.
Of course.
Let's hope that Hamlin makes it through this and he's in stable but serious condition right now in the hospital in Cincinnati. But you can't just say, wave your hand and go, you know what? Those teams aren't going to make it.
Listen, I understood why in the moment people – I'm sorry, Don. I understood why people in the moment said that because obviously everyone wants to emphasize how the only thing, of course, that truly matters is the kid's health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's correct. But at the same time, it ends up becoming just a thing that's performative that people say. It doesn't matter. None of it mattered. Well, the reason there were 20 million people, 30 million people tuned in, it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of things on the line here, and they made the right call last night, and now they have to figure out how to make the right call moving forward because you can't just call it a tie. They do have to figure out a way to make it work.
Hey, guys, if we learned anything from 9/11, if we learned anything during the pandemic, is that we can figure this out. All right, so if it means that we got to get rid of the bye between the championship games and the Super Bowl, and we'll just have a standalone Cincinnati-Buffalo game in a de facto Week 19, then we'll do it that way. If they make a decision that, hey, we're not going to replay the game and that half game is going to either benefit or be a problem for the team, hey, we'll live with that too. 1972, I was just talking to Chris Majkowski about it, there was a work stoppage that killed what, Michael, a week of the season. Well, they came back and they played, look it up, the Detroit Tigers won the American League East by a half game over the Boston Red Sox because they played one more game than Boston and won it. So Boston missed out on the postseason, and the Tigers got to go. There was no wild card back then, so you could do it that way. Or you can – we'll figure it out, all right? So take your time, work it out, because both are right. We've got a season to finish, but there's also a life that we need to respect.
And
so if it ends up taking a little longer than possible, we will figure it out.
And if you do have to play in a week 19, it does have some adverse effect on the teams that get the bye in the AFC and the NFC. All of a sudden, they don't play for 2 weeks. They don't just have a week bye. They have 2 weeks of bye.
Oh, that is interesting.
So, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here, but the most important part is that this kid pulls through. And, again, stable but still critical condition. And he was intubated last night. Those are scary words. Cardiac arrest is scary words.
All of it felt really – there was a certain point – I don't know how you guys felt. Early on, I really didn't think it was going to end well last night. Mm-hmm. I really thought that it was going to be really bad. And obviously it still is absolutely touch and go. But then as the night went on, I did start to – I don't know. I started to have a more positive feeling that I think this thing could end up okay. And that does seem to be the indication that at least there's a chance here. Because for a while, guys, it seemed very bleak. Mm-hmm. And now it does seem like there's a chance this kid could be okay. And then, of course, as you dig in more, and this is sort of the good thing and bad thing about social media, you learn more and more about DeMar Hamlin as the night goes on. And you just see that he's a wonderful kid.
Right.
Who's, like, not just, like, wonderful in a generic way where people say it about anyone who's not doing well. Like, really committed to the community. Just a tremendous young man. So, I really pray this kid makes it through.
Well, one of the incredible stories, of not just about him, but as the human spirit, is that he puts a toy drive together. And I guess there was a fund to hit a goal of $2,500. For this toy drive, well, at last check, it's up to $4 million mm-hmm. from fans and obviously NFL players that, you know, called to attention of a player that was probably pretty obscure before this, you know, who's had a very brief career. He's only 24 years old, to really call attention to something good that he was doing and people, you know, stepping up for that. So, and I love the fact that on social media, they were, in lieu of showing the collapse on the field, show the things that he did, the toy drive that he had earlier during the holiday season, and just trying to get good vibes, and hopefully this turns out to be better. Because I'm with you, Peter. At that particular moment, it did not feel like this was going to end well at all.
And, again, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. He's still in critical condition.
Right.
And, you know, when you're intubated, you're not breathing on your own. So we're not doctors or anything like that. We cross our fingers and we say prayers that he's okay. But this is a pretty serious thing that happened. The guy didn't have a heartbeat for 9 minutes on the field.
It was 9 minutes?
Yeah, they administered CPR for 9 minutes. And then finally, I guess they got a faint pulse and they put oxygen, and that they had to get a pulse before they could get him in the ambulance. But one thing that should be said about the athletic trainers of teams, they train for years, and something like this might not ever have to be used, but they were champs. I mean, you see it. I mean, these guys work endless hours, guys and gals, and for them to come out on that field and do that.
Yep.
I mean, you don't go to work thinking you're going to do that. I mean, remember the Jets athletic trainers, Don, with Dennis Byrd? I mean, they saved his life. I mean, everybody thinks about the old days where they come and they put ethyl chloride on somebody's elbow if you get hit with a pitch. No, they do a lot more. They could save lives. They might have saved this kid's life yesterday.
Right, and you may never have to do it, and then in a moment's notice you have to do it. And people are also speculating, you know, why couldn't they just take him right away to the hospital? His best chance of survival was working on him right where he was. So there was no chance of ever just leaving him. So they had to work on him where he was for that length of time just to be able to get that pulse and get him to a part where he was stable enough to be taken to the hospital. And, you know, it's humbling, guys, especially during this time of year. And you know, we care so much about these games. We care so much about the result. And we live and die. That's always a phrase we talk about. We live and die with our teams. But it's moments like that to remind us that this is the entertainment business, and we'll figure it out. You know, we'll figure out all – I know there's a lot of money involved, and there's a lot of, you know, people that want to get back to football, and we will. That point will come. But right now – a life is literally at stake here, and let's see how it plays out.
Now, we promise you we will give you updates on DeMar Hamlin throughout the show, everything that becomes available. You know, Coley Harvey is at the hospital for ESPN, so when we find anything out, we'll give it to you. We're not going to do the whole show on this. I don't think that's what people want. They want to be kept abreast of what's going on, which we will do, but we wanted to give you the broader look at it right now, and we'll take some phone calls. Obviously, it's on people's mind. But, you know, Giants are in the playoffs. The Jets with an epic collapse. We'll talk to Robert Saleh at 5:15. We'll get to all of that. 50 years ago today, George Steinbrenner brought the Yankees for $10 million from CBS. And I think it was $120,000 out of his pocket. He owned 2% of the team. He wasn't even the headline in the Daily News.
Oh, my gosh. That's insane.
So he ended up, I think when he passed away, owning about 65% of the team. So slowly but surely, he bought up different shares from people, from investors. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that changed sports the way we look at it today, too.
Mm-hmm.
50 years ago when he bought the team from CBS as part of a consortium. We'll get into that as well. But let's take some phone calls right now. 1-800-919-3776. It's so good to be back with all of you. Again, we hope that you had a great holiday, whether you celebrate Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and everybody had a happy new year as well. How about when the clock struck zero, mm-hmm. midnight?
I think that's what it called, midnight, yeah.
The well, when you're counting down 10, 9, 8.
And it is zero, I suppose, sure.
That's when Ohio State missed a field goal. At the exact point that the clock went to zero.
I wasn't sure because we went out to dinner. I was down in Florida for the Ranger-Panther game, and so I went back to my room so I can go and be able to chat virtually with the family as the clock zeroed out. But I was also intently watching this game as they were getting ready to kick the field goal, but I had to flip over to ABC to watch the clock, and then when the clock hit zero, Happy New Year, I flipped back over, and Georgia was taking a knee. So I had a feeling that that kick was probably missed at the gun,
yep.
as the football ball dropped, the actual ball in Times Square dropped. Amazing. How crazy is that?
Those two, we're not big college football fans here, but those two games, pretty incredible.
I have to admit, it's a rare moment where I'm upset that I care so little about college football that I forgot either one was on.
Disgraceful.
Ooh. Watch the full.
I gotta tell you.
Watch the full highlight afterwards, and I was actually upset.
You know,
it's
Greg
Dunn.
Nothing changes. You know, the calendar flips to 2023.
I had to watch.
Nothing changes.
Listen,
and he'll tune out when we talk about Brian Sabian getting hired by the Yankees.
I'm already checked out. Wait, I just that like it beeped out. I didn't even hear you say his name. But
what happened? 10 seconds.
Yeah. What am I doing? Where am I?
That's kind of how the Commanders performed on Sunday.
Well, listen. Let's not bring that up. I was locked in to Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper, obviously,
right.
watching the important stuff that matters.
But it just what it does remind you guys is just how offensive football is king.
Oh, yeah.
Because these guys are all getting drafted, guys, right? They're all getting drafted, and they're all playing, and these defenders are working their tails off trying to stop it. But when you look at this sport, this is where we're going, guys. There's not going to be any more punts. Everybody's going to go for it on fourth down. There's going to be 50 points on each side. It's going to turn into basketball here. You can't stop these teams. You can't stop these quarterbacks. It's crazy the amount of points that were scored in those two games, Michael. It was nuts. I bet you there were a few college basketball games that didn't have as many points as those teams.
It's also so funny. Like, stop drinking that while the mic is on. We hear your ice dropping. What's with you?
Is ice bad? Or people?
I got to tell you. Say what you want about the show. It's consistent.
It is.
You know,
consistent.
The year changes.
It's unbelievable. Hit the cough button and take your sip of iced coffee. Do we have to hear that?
All right, Ray.
I missed
okay,
you guys.
I got
I really
I'm
did.
Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And I forgot what I was going to say.
We're talking about points in the NFL.
So Jim Harbaugh has lost 6 straight bowl games. 6 straight.
Right.
And, I mean, some of the really big ones. And now NFL teams are lining up to hire him.
All right.
It's like none of this stuff matters.
I don't
get
it.
He can't get Michigan through a big game. All right, so he solved beating Ohio State. But now 2 straight playoffs he's lost. He's not supposed to lose to TCU.
Well, and I don't get it. Because if you can't win the big game as a college football coach, what are you really showing people? You're showing people that you're a great recruiter. But when it comes down to the most important coaching moment, you're failing. Well,
he failed in the Super Bowl.
Last time I checked.
The 49ers.
And last time I checked, head coaches don't recruit in the NFL. So what are you bringing? What's the desire for then?
Yeah, he seems to be one of the flavors of the month. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Al in Connecticut. Al.
Hello.
Hello, Al.
Hey, Al.
How you doing?
Good.
Who am I talking to?
You're not talking to anybody now.
Come on. We enjoy can't.
What a great way to start the year. Who am I speaking to, please?
We cannot.
I mean, really, you called the show. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, who am I speaking to, please?
No, go away. Seriously, just go away.
You're speaking to George Santos. That's who you're speaking to.
No, we've set right there. Michael said it.
Who's this?
We've set the tone for 2023. We're not going to stand for this garbage anymore, right? Get ready to be on the air. Who am I talking to? Who is this? What's going on, guys?
Hello?
Making the rounds. No. Go make your point. We go. That's it.
Oh. Fast pace. Hey.
I just don't get it. I always try to relate to the caller, but I've called radio shows before. I don't understand how they pick up and you go, "Who am I speaking to?" I just don't get it.
20 minutes in, and it might be time for me to go.
Wow,
yeah,
that's it.
It's early. It's unbelievable. Who
Think
am I
about
talking
when we got
to?
20 minutes in.
Who am I talking to?
A bad phone call. Michael's threatening to leave.
It's like
Peter's
call,
eating and drinking on the air.
You're calling like 911, and they pick up. And you go, who am I talking to?
Hello.
Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Danny.
No, he knows.
You know, whether it's 2003 or 2023, and you see Danny from Long Island on the board, take the call.
Yeah,
because
right.
You're not going to get that.
Steadying
you're not get
influence.
That. A bad take every once in a while, but at least a response. Listen, a couple of things from last night, sadly. Happy New Year, everybody. I wish we had a happier note. But, you know, Don, you mentioned 9/11, and this obviously isn't 9/11, but it was a weird kind of a national tragedy that played out in real time where everyone in the country, because it was Monday Night Football, it wasn't 1 o'clock in Jacksonville, it was Monday Night Football, a great matchup, and everybody in America's phone was lighting up. My wife, who doesn't watch football, stayed up till 11:30. She was totally obsessed with it, and it's just a sad thing. We hope he pulls through. A couple of things. You know, I was in charge of the Little League, so I know about this AED things, and they first started being put onto Little League fields in schools because young men with a very thin chest wall were getting hit with line drives at a very specific moment, the exact perfect storm that it takes to cause this type of incident. And if you look at this young man, he doesn't look like an NFL safety. Probably couldn't have played in the NFL at that physique two generations ago. He doesn't look like Polamalu or any of these other guys, because as the game gets faster, the safeties are being required to cover wide receivers. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. I don't believe that. And he's a very thin man across the chest compared to other NFL football players. And the guy leaned in with the helmet. It was not a particularly vicious, hard, or anything else, because he kind of flew away with the hit. But it hit him right at that's exactly what I believe, that we all believe, happened. And it's just a one-in-a-million shot. It could happen in baseball. The kids would put on a simple little vest underneath their jersey that had a pad directly over the heart, and that's what solved the problem, because it's just an unbelievable perfect storm of events that leads to this tragedy, and it's easily solvable. I don't blame football. I'm not blaming the violence of football. It could happen in basketball. It could happen in a rugby. It could happen in soccer. We've had soccer players get hit in the chest with the ball. It's just one of the
Well, you know what, Danny? Maybe this gives people some hope. It's called commotio cordis, where the heart stops after a blow to the chest. And Chris Pronger, Don knows this, in 1998, he had commotio cordis after taking a slap shot to the chest. He was back on the ice weeks later and played 12 more years.
Well, that's the thing, right? So I guess it's what a scary thing, because we don't know what's going to happen with this kid. We know that if he gets through, he could be totally okay. I mean, and it's such a freakish thing. You watch the hit over and over again, and I think the thing that was so crazy about it was anyone who's watched football at all wouldn't think there was anything unusual about the hit.
Right.
And remember, he's the one.
He didn't get.
He's hitting T. Higgins.
Right. So, T. Higgins administered the shoulder.
Right. And, right. And you saw that the way he popped up immediately after. He wasn't concussed. There was no sort of head issue. He just stood up and his heart stopped. It was actually really interesting in that regard, because at every point now, with very good reason, people want to forward the narrative of how violent the NFL is and how little they care about the players and the danger and the peril that the players are in. By the way, I'm not saying that narrative is a faulty one. I'm just saying it's one that now is very constant and people bring it up all the time. To Danny's point, this hit really wasn't part of that. This was actually a sort of random run-of-the-mill play that happened to be terrifying.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPNPods. That's Amazon.com/ESPNPods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
No one thought that this was going to happen. I love the players, though. Yeah, nobody believed. Well, yeah, you're right. Nobody did believe. In fact, your own front office didn't believe in you. They didn't make
Let's
a trade
go!
At the trade deadline.
Right.
So, I mean, you could use whatever you want to hang on the rim and stuff like that. No one believed in you. Every expert in the NFL believed in you or didn't believe in you. And for the most part, you guys didn't probably think you were going to make the playoffs either. So congratulations. You should be thrilled because you exceeded all expectations, including your front office.
Yay!
Well, it's year one of a rebuild. And they made the playoffs. I mean, that's
pretty
shocking
great.
To everyone. So, yeah, I mean, listen, it's something you say. Nobody believed in us except us and all that. But you're right. They didn't make a move at the deadline because it wasn't about this year. But the exciting thing is, for it not being about this year, what a heck of a year it turned out to be, and it really puts a lot on the future. And I guess it's not a shame because it's the way it's supposed to go, guys, but a lot of the players that helped get them there may not be here next year because with all the money they have on the cap, when they finally put things together and the draft picks they have, they're going to replace a lot of the players that might have contributed here. We're talking about them not having great wide receivers. If they go out and get weapons, guys, it's going to replace some of the players that actually helped them win these games down the stretch against Washington, against Indianapolis, to be able to get into the playoffs. But it's exciting, it's fun, and it's very reminiscent, guys, of 2007 in the sense that they now have a meaningless game in week 18, and the decision, do we play or do we not play and go into the playoffs in a very wide-open conference and see what can happen? And that's why, Michael, I think it's kind of folly if you're the Giants organizations to even consider not playing it straight because you've based everything on how Coughlin handled that game against the Patriots, the undefeated season. They played all their starters, and that created the momentum to run to a Super Bowl. Because it's become such a big deal, it was in Coughlin's book that I just finished reading, like it's become such a part of the Giants' culture, doesn't that put them in a position to at least start the games with their starting players?
I couldn't disagree with you more. Daniel Jones not seeing that field. I mean, he took some blows against the Colts. This guy in the past has gotten some injuries. He's had a really nice season. I need him healthy for that game that might be against the Vikings. No, I'm not playing him. I don't care.
Well, and now Philly needs the game.
Right.
I'm just saying that, you know, Giant fans were complaining about the way that the Eagles had handled it just a couple of years ago, remember? And they didn't play it straight, knocked us out of the playoffs and all that. But what I'm saying is that no matter what, you know, whether it's the 30 for 30 or the Coughlin book or the America's teams, it was all about how the Giants played it straight the last week of the season. Madden calling, leaving the voicemail for Tom Coughlin in tears, the fact that he played his players, and it created the momentum on this miracle run, you know, and it's become such a part of the fabric and the culture that it would just kind of be – I'm not saying it's wrong. You're right, Michael. I don't want to see anybody important get hurt in a game that doesn't mean anything, but at the same time, How do you just ignore something that happened in 2007 that this organization is used as like a staple of how football is supposed to be played?
Well, I don't know, care about that part as much as much as I care about the momentum part. The how football should be played, I agree, Don. It sounds great. I don't think that's what you need to worry about, the history of the franchise. I think you need to think about what's best for this team. They're playing great now. This is the best the team has been. So the question is, how much do you want to take your foot off the gas? It's interesting because we were all thinking about this week, will Philly take the week off?
Now they can't.
Now they can't, and the Giants can't. So it's a bizarre twist.
Guys.
But the problem is people have to play anyway. This is my issue about resting people. Even if you rest Daniel Jones, you rest Saquon, you rest the people you want, some of your starters are still playing.
Right, there's only 53 players.
So you're risking players either way. I wonder if it's to Don's point, you just go for it.
Yeah, you're risking players, but I'm sorry, there are more important players than others.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to risk your quarterback. Yeah. I understand that, but I mean, you could also devise a game plan for him where you just try to protect him and don't run him very much. Yeah, I don't know.
I think you start him. And then you see how you feel it out. Obviously, you're not going to play. You're not going to put him in situations where he is going to get hit. You got it. You got to play to the room, right? You got to play to the moment. The moment says you don't need this game. But depending on what the NFL does, guys, if they do decide to have Bengals Bills be a standalone Week 19, if the Giants don't play their starters in Week 18, do you want, as to Peter's point, literally not play for 2 weeks before you play your playoff game after you've been one of the hottest teams in the NFL to get you into the postseason? It's a conundrum, Michael. It really is.
Yeah.
I think you're making it out to be.
Well, no. I believe it is a conundrum. I'm telling you what I would do. I would not play Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley, but knowing, just seeing Dable and, you know, the cut of his jib, I think he plays the game straight. But I don't think it has anything to do with Coughlin. I just don't. I mean,
it's
a nice part of Giant history, but I think you get into these situations where you can actually protect your team, that you don't have to win that last game of the season. Giants are in a good situation, so take advantage of it.
But I know you're not supposed to care. I'm not talking about the history, and I did mention the fabric of the organization. I'm just saying that so many people point to that miracle run, and the reason for it is because they didn't mail in the last week of the season. So they seem to think it had something to do with this run to win a championship. So is it
but there was so
there
much.
Something...
But Tom Coughlin was obviously an old-school guy. And, you know, the Patriots were going for an undefeated season. So he wanted to do right by the history of the NFL.
Right.
And try to knock them off. But this is just seeding for Philly. So why risk yourself for seeding for Philly? You're not going to face Philly in the first game.
No, absolutely. I'm just, and again, I'm not feeling any moral obligation to do it, but it's eerily similar in the sense that nobody thought that Giant team was going to go anywhere. Remember, they started 0-2. Tom Coughlin was going to get fired. And I don't think anybody at the start of the playoffs felt like this was a team that was going to make a run. Look what they had to go through at Tampa, at Dallas, at Green Bay to eventually beat the undefeated Patriots. I'm not saying that's going to happen with this team, guys, but it's eerily similar in the sense that does momentum play a factor in what could be a wide-open conference? And I don't want those guys, if it ends up that there's no games for them to start the playoffs, if it ends up being a de facto bye, do you want to have Daniel Jones literally not play for 2 weeks going into, you know, the biggest game of his career? So I would play him, I'd be conservative, and then look for a way to get him out of the game as soon as you
now,
could,
now let me throw
rather
this,
than just not dressing them.
Let me throw this at you. You know, Giant fan, I have a really good friend who's a big Giant fan.
Okay, Dave Rothenberg.
I said a really good friend.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And so I'm texting with him yesterday, and he said, why don't you get your guy Dan Orlovsky on? He said that Daniel Jones couldn't play, and you guys have been killing Jones too. Well, Don hasn't so much. But
I haven't either. I like Jones.
But
anybody's killed Jones.
I mean, he has 24 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. He had a nice season. He's a middle-of-the-road quarterback. Let's not make him out to be Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the Giants have some decisions to make, but if it's going to cost me $30 million a year to keep Daniel Jones, I think I'm going to take a pass. I think he's done a nice job. I understand what the Giants have done. They haven't given him the weapons. It's been a menagerie of fools that have coached the team, different offensive coordinators. He hasn't really had protection. I get all of that. I think he's a nice player. Is he a great player? No, I don't think he is. And I'm not sure, Don, that I see him becoming a great player. I think he had a really – he stepped up and showed some onions this year because everybody was counting him out. And for those people that say the Giants, you know, everybody disrespected us. The Giants disrespected Daniel Jones. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option, Don. So they didn't believe in him.
And they didn't make a deal to do anything at the deadline because it wasn't supposed to be about this year. But aren't you intrigued a little bit, Michael?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, but think about it. A guy with 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions,
He's actually 15 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, I believe.
So the point is that he's had a really good season. Not a great season, not a Pro Bowl season, but a good season. Imagine if they go out and get him some weapons. I mean, he was throwing to guys we've never heard of before at the wide receiver position. So if those stats can go even higher with a better offensive line, which is starting to get better, but with some weapons, I mean, I know $30 million sounds like a lot, Michael, but when you take a look at the going rate for the free agents that are going to be out there, Michael, he's going to be the best free agent quarterback available. You know, unless you tell me Rodgers becomes available, Brady, you know, it's a different story.
Derek Carr.
He's better than Mike White. He's better than Derek Carr right now. He's better than Baker Mayfield. So if you're
Derek Carr.
I don't think he's better than Derek. I'm not believing the hype that Derek Carr stinks. I'm sorry, I can't. Maybe I'm a fool.
All right, well, that's all. But you can't even say it's debatable at this point.
You think that Daniel Jones is at best the 15th best quarterback in the NFL?
Well, maybe
middle of the road.
Probably middle of the road. But I also see some things, some athleticism, some things that you can do with him. All right, maybe he can't throw like Derek Carr or put up the numbers that Derek Carr's had in his career, but you can do some things with him, and then you add that element to some weapons. Again, I'm with you, Michael. Well, let's not talk him up to be a top-5 quarterback, but he's a quarterback that I think Giant fans have now fallen in love with. And now there's that Eli feeling.
Like,
well, Eli was never the top-5 quarterback, but look what we were able to accomplish with him. He's a guy that I want to have back. And if it means having to pay him $30 million a year, not knowing what the alternative is, it's not going to come out of this year's draft. It's not going to come from any of the players that play that position that are available right now. If I've got to give him $30 million a year rather than have to go look for a quarterback, I'll probably lean towards giving him the 30.
I remember a time on this show, not in the far distant past, when I told Don this could very well play out.
He shot you down.
He shot me down.
Like a redheaded stepchild.
He said no chance. Yeah. And now they're sitting on the precipice. Maybe they win 11 games. And now you are. And now all of a sudden you're saying, I'd give him $30 million. You were completely out on the idea.
We're both right. Because everybody's right here. All right, he's not a great quarterback, but he's also a quarterback I want to have back. All right, you painted a scenario of like them going 12-4, and he's the reason. Like
he's a big reason they could go 10-6-1.
He's a big reason, but also the coaching, the defense, I think's played better than people thought. Saquon had a resurgence this year as well, and they certainly took advantage of what was out there. But let's not build him out to be, you know, the best quarterback in football. But he's definitely a quarterback I'd like to see back. I'd like to have him back rather than have to dance with who do I want to bring in. Do I want to start over with Carr? Do I want to go out and if Jimmy G becomes available? Or do I want to make it work with Jones? I want to make it work with Jones.
Well, it's all going to fall down to what Shane and Dable think. Maybe he's a product of Dable's incredibly facile offensive mind. Maybe he doesn't have weapons. His wide receivers are not good.
Well, let me ask you this, Michael.
Go ahead.
If he had played this way last year, would this regime have given him the fifth-year option?
If he had played this way last year, Joe Judge could be here. There wouldn't be a regime.
Right, but now you see what coaching can do, right? I mean, I think that's the difference. Like you said, the menagerie of garbage that they've had since Coughlin – you know, nothing seems to work. Now they've got competent coaching, not just a head coach, but an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, experienced guys that know how to work with the weapons that they have. And now you're seeing a guy he's a playoff quarterback. And it's not even like this garbage is barely getting in. I mean, this is a team that under the old format would have found a way into the postseason.
Lawrence Tynes, who has 2 Super Bowls with the Giants,
sure
this is what he texted out. Tweeted out, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
You have to give him 5 years, $200 million plus, nothing less with $100 million guaranteed. If his agent lets him sign something less than $40 million a year, his agent stinks.
No.
I'm sorry.
Well, Lawrence Tynes.
That's
kicker talk. That's somebody. Yeah, doesn't, that's, I'm sorry. That's four. You think he's going to get what Kyler Murray got? Essentially,
it's amazing.
No.
No, that
the guy. The guy's had a nice season. It's not had a great season.
I'm going to talk to a kicker.
This is where Michael's right. It's you get too black and white sometimes in this sport, where you stink or you're the best quarterback in football. No. There's got to be some in between.
You want to know?
There is a reality here, guys, and we can agree or disagree on how you handle that reality. But the reality is that he's somewhere probably right now between 10 and 15 in ranked in quarterbacks who could get better. Under the right circumstances, if you're going to pay him $40 million a year, you're exaggerating everything that just happened.
But I agree. For between 30, 32, that's probably about where he's going to land.
Well, God bless him.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is going to be a little controversial, guys.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jets have not shown up. I'm sorry. They haven't shown up.
I don't think that's controversial.
So 7-4 goes to 7-9. They've lost 5 in a row. Now, everybody's going to blame the quarterbacking. Mike White was very pedestrian the other day. And I think I'm being kind. Zach Wilson wasn't good. But one of the most overrated units in all of football is the Jet defense. I mean, you can give me, top 5 in yards allowed, top 5. Tell me when they stood up and made a stop when they had to. How'd that work out against the Lions? No. How did it work out against the Vikings? I'm telling you, they consistently gave up big, big scores when it was time for them to shut them down. You can play with numbers all you want. I look at it with my eyes. Their defense was not as great as you think. You know what's great? Their cornerbacks are great. Their safeties aren't great. Their defensive front is great. And their linebackers aren't great. So once teams just got rid of the ball quickly and they started to expose the linebackers and the safeties, you scored on them whenever you wanted to. Mm. So please don't tell me they have a championship-level defense. All they need is a quarterback. No, Don, Peter, that's not a championship-level defense. Mm.
There's
a difference. I got caught up in it, too. You know, when you say championship-caliber defense, it's a very, very good defense. It's a top 5 defense. But does a championship-caliber defense give up that 51-yard touchdown on fourth down against Detroit that cost them the game?
The guy was moving in slow motion, Don. Right. The tight
does
end.
Does a championship defense allow Trevor Lawrence to beat you in your building?
And beat you bad.
I understand you didn't get anything out of offense. I understand that. Listen, I get it. I get there's a bunch of excuses. The offense was on the field for 3 seconds. They were sucking wind in the fourth quarter. I get it. We had a second-year quarterback, and then Geno Smith in Seattle. Everybody's going to Seattle and winning games, right? All of a sudden, that's not a difficult place to play anymore. And Seattle's not going to the playoffs, and you couldn't come up with a big stop when you needed to. So Michael's right. The stats tell you it's a great defense, and you watched with your eyes, and early in the year, it looked like a tremendous defense. But championship defense has to bail out its offense. They've got to play better than they played in the last 3-4 weeks of the season. It's not their biggest problem at all under any stretch. But, Michael, you're right. Overrated is definitely a name that pops to mind when you start talking about it being a championship-caliber defense.
Jets defense forced 14 turnovers in the first 9 games. Mm. They forced 2 in the last 7. They're not great. Again, play with the numbers all you want, top 5 this, top 5 that. Defenses that step up, those are great defenses. I'm sorry.
And the shame of it, Michael, and I don't want to beat him up too much because I'm not sure the 85 Bears win with this offense. I mean, this offense was ridiculously poor. You know, so they're gonna have to play out of their minds down the stretch to help win some of these games because they gave you nothing.
Do you know what their biggest injury was, guys, in my opinion? Breece Hall.
Mm-hmm. No,
not even a doubt. I mean, their running game went away after that. If they have a healthy Breece Hall, I think that makes their quarterbacks better. It just does.
And I heard Greg and Dan on the post game say something. I think it was Greg who said it that I thought was really interesting. This team never really seemed to bounce back after giving up the punt return against New England to lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
That from that moment on, this season, all the sort of positive was stripped out of this team, and it has been a downward spiral to here. And now it stinks because it was hard to imagine a world in which you could have gone into this offseason not feeling good as a Jets fan, but I'm sorry, you're not feeling good.
No, you shouldn't feel good. You can't say, well, you know, it's a positive. No, the Giants could look at this as a positive. You went from a short I think they had a 70% chance of making the playoffs when they were 7-4, and now it's zero. Five losses in a row. You didn't step up. I'm sorry.
Well, but it also tells you this, too. And I'm not trying to bail anybody out, all right, because I think the coaching right now is a huge question mark. I'm sorry. We love Robert Saleh. We'll have him on a 5-15. He didn't have his team ready. 10-day rest going into Seattle. He was on with Dan Grasso, dropped an S-bomb about like how much fun it is to play in Seattle. His team didn't look like he was prepared. LaFleur, a lot of question marks around him. A lot of question marks just around the coaching period with this team and some of the units as we talked about. But it accentuates the one thing, guy. You can't win in this league without quarterback play. You can't do it. You just can't. I don't care how good your offense is. I don't care how good your defense is, special teams. If you don't get quarterback play, you don't win. And they didn't get quarterback play. I mean, Mike White, better than Wilson, I think we'd all agree. That's not a quarterback that's leading me anywhere. This whole, just manage the game. Those days are over. You got to get quarterback play. They didn't get it. They didn't win.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.